And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, education is a real bone of political contention these days, right?
Yes.
And it's come to Pennsylvania.
Well, it's kind of been here under the surface for a while.
Well, it's been here under the surface in terms of financing, because remember, Corbett cut spending to the schools, state spending to the schools, that forced local real estate taxes to go up in communities that could afford to do that, and in all cases caused public education to go down because the money was cut. But now we have a real drive to eliminate public education altogether. And in Pennsylvania, of course, we've got this guy, Jeffrey Yaz, who is the, one of the country's leading financiers in the drive to end public education.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think you've got to go back a little ways. And you've got to take a broader overview of this whole thing, because it's a mix of a lot of philosophy and political philosophies as to what the role of government is. You know, the European model was private education. One of the big innovations in America, more or less a century or century and a half ago, was public education. And a lot of the states, including Pennsylvania, have because it's always been considered a state thing, is to enshrine in their constitutions that public education is it's not labeled a virtue, but it's labeled a desired duty of the state, of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And, you know, I mean, there are complications because some of the private education around the country was the Catholics who set up their own, had to, in some instances, set up their own school system. And, of course, we know in the South, when integration became an issue, we had the racial setting up of a private school system.
But that's the origin of the charter school.
Yeah, that's you know, that's the Nancy McLean introduction to her book,
right,
on democracy and chains. But, you know, I think now what it's looked at in many respects is this is a source of money that the private sector can use to again get the transfer of public monies, large amounts of public monies, to the private sector, much like what they want to do with Social Security, what they don't want to do for health care. In other words, we want health care, we want to get public money into the private sector, and in the Social Security, we want to be able to get the Social Security funding into the private sector. That's what they want with education, because education is a lot of money.
That's the whole idea of the Medicare Advantage program.
Right. Which I understand now has more enrollment than even Medicare.
Well, because it's pushed. Employers use it. And exactly. In New York City, for example, even the city government is forcing retirees to go into a Medicare Advantage program instead of the Medicare program that they've had up until now.
Right, and it's advertised, and Medicare does not advertise and whatever, and it's clever. But, you know, let's get back to education. In Pennsylvania, you have, interestingly, unions, and you have two large unions, the PSEA, the Pennsylvania State Education Association, and then you have the teachers union under the AFL-CIO. They haven't always worked together on things. They've competed for membership and things like that. And in many instances, or at least in some instances, they've, against their own interest, wound up backing Republicans. You mentioned Tom Corbett, for instance. Mm-hmm. And then they're appalled by the fact that monies for public schools start to dry up, you know, on that. I'm friends with a woman who used to be very active in the PSEA many years ago, and the stories she tells about the background and the infighting and things like that are really interesting. The teachers are not necessarily very good or very astute politicians in looking at things in that regard. They kind of rely on their leadership, and sometimes leadership succeeds and sometimes leadership fails. You know, I remember when I was in high school, it was the first teacher strike in the history of Scranton. You know, it took the teachers all that length of time until the late 1960s or in order to organize and to fight for decent salaries and things like that. I mean, when you think of what they were getting paid in those days, it wasn't a whole heck of a lot.
Well, the thing is that I don't say that things have to happen simply because they're in the Constitution, but if it's in the Constitution, they should happen. And the Constitution does guarantee public education to the people of Pennsylvania.
And there was a lawsuit several years ago. It was decided earlier this year, I believe, by the judge of the Commonwealth Court, Renee Jubilier Cohn, that the state had, in effect, underfunded public education, in particular in those school districts that brought the suit, including Wilkes-Barre. And the whole issue is what was going to happen about it. This week, the state appealed that decision, and she reaffirmed her decision. So now it'll go to the Supreme Court if they decide to take the case. But we're in a budget situation now, and the question is, Governor Shapiro has asked for more money for the schools. The question is going to be what the state Senate, which is Republican controlled, comes up with.
But the problem would you have with Governor Shapiro is he may support public schools, but he also supports charter schools.
Yeah, he wants more money for them.
Yeah,
for the private schools. Private schools.
And it's not possible. I mean, he doesn't have the right to print money. Therefore, he only has a given pot of money. If the private schools get the money, the public schools can't get the money, or somebody can't get the money.
Sure. It's a zero sum game.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, as a Democrat, he seems to be for more private school. It should be noted that he was privately schooled coming up in a Jewish day school. Of course, there in Pennsylvania, there's also a lot of political power in the Catholic Church because of their schools, that they want money. And over the years, I mean, there used to be a time when they got nothing. And over the years, the courts and the legislature have have chipped away at that nothing and given more and more. For instance, they say if you bus students to public schools, you have to bus students to the private schools.
Well, the Supreme Court ruled that if a state offers any kind of money to private schools, you can't refuse it to the religious schools. There's a constant drip, yeah, in Maine, that's right. There's drip that will make acceptable the complete destruction of the barrier between church and state, which the Constitution, you think, has erected.
Yes. I mean, that was one of the big things. Like I said, it gets to the Catholic schools. So public schools are subsidizing religious education, and it goes to other schools, too. I mean, the Jewish day schools, Muslim schools, things like that. They won't, although there are a lot fewer of them than the Catholic schools. And then you're going to get evangelical schools. Let's face it. And pretty soon, and you're going to have homeschooling. These parents that don't want their kids to go to public schools for a variety of reasons. And of course, there's different ways of funding. There's just, grants or funds flowing directly to the schools, but then they also have the charter programs, where, I'm sorry, the voucher programs, where you give each parent, they say this is parental choice. So we give each parent a voucher for each student. And it's interestingly, of course, that always helps the rich people. We were talking beforehand, I used the situation with Scranton Prep, where I believe the tuition's around $15,000 a year. If you've got two school-age students who want to attend prep, that's $30,000. Well, the vouchers never cover the full amount. The vouchers might cover up to maybe half of that, $7,500. So the family has to come up with the additional $7,500 per student, or $15,000, let's say, if you have two students. But the average family doesn't earn that much money. And this is money, this is after-tax money that they have to come up with. So if they earn $60,000 or $70,000 a year, you can't pay $15,000 extra for schooling. It just doesn't work. You don't have that much money after taxes, after housing, after food cost. But the rich people, the people who are making $200,000 or $300,000 a year, that $15,000 doesn't really hurt them. So they get the full benefit, and the poor families say, yeah, here's a voucher that I can't really use.
So the poor people get something they can't use, and the rich people get your example, $7,500 per kid benefit.
Right. Yeah.
Meanwhile, the public school loses the money.
Right. The public school loses the money. And we know that the situation you were mentioning, that these schools, a lot of these schools, the results are skewed because they cherry pick. They don't take students who have learning disabilities or need IPs, individual programming. They don't provide some of the amenities that the public schools provide to everybody.
They don't provide student lunches necessarily.
Right.
Or buses to bring the kid to school necessarily.
Right. What they do often provide is big salaries to the people who run the schools,
or not to the teachers, because there's no unions in any of these charter schools.
Right, right. But in Pennsylvania, we come back. In the Republican primary for governor last time, Jeffrey Yaz, who's a big proponent. This is a libertarian stuff. This is Milton Friedman stuff.
Right.
He backed one of the candidates that lost. The former U.S. attorney, I'm forgetting his name now, from Philadelphia, but now it looks like some of his money may be there with Josh Shapiro on this.
And it's good that you point out that this is libertarian stuff, because there's an ideological political campaign that goes along with it. They call the public schools government schools.
Right. That's a Frank Luntz type of thing.
Right. Government schools. Don't subject your kids to government schools.
Right.
Parents' choice. It's all designed to destroy the concept in people's minds that there is such a thing as society, that there are social obligations and social responsibilities and social rights. It's dog eat dog. That's the world that they're projecting.
Yeah. The common good, which is what
there's no such thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're all in this together in the public schools. In those schools, no, we're separate.
We're separate. It's individual vouchers, right?
We don't want those people,
right?
Into that, and you get that that feeling there about that stuff, and it's. But again, it's what I, Falk rule number one is think. Number two, rather, is think long term. And that's these folks have been on this decades long crusade. Inch by inch, they keep moving forward. because they're very well funded.
They're very well funded, and they're clever in the use of their words.
Yeah.
Moms for Liberty.
Oh, yes.
Moms for Liberty. It turns out that Moms for Liberty, which is a pro-choice organization and a book banning organization.
Not pro-choice in the abortion issue, pro-choice in the school choice.
In the school choice, that's right, school issue. And then book banning, not pro-choice, because they're for banning books, right? And interestingly enough, in the Indiana chapter, which just recently was organized, they issued their first newsletter. On the cover, they featured a quote from Adolf Hitler.
Right.
It's incredible.
You know, if you own the child, you'll own the adult or something like that.
Something like that, exactly.
But, you know, for liberty, you know, it's another one of these right-wing fronts that gets well-funded in the background.
By the way, here in Pennsylvania, we have 67 counties. Moms for Liberty claim chapters in 40 counties.
Yeah, they're around here.
Yeah.
And, of course, the choice that they want is only their choice. They don't want other people to have the choice.
Right, of things.
You know, we want to ban, you know, your books. Your kids don't have the choice of reading what you want them to read.
Right.
They can only read what we want them to read.
Right.
Type of stuff.
And these are libertarians who don't believe that the government should disappear. They just believe the government should work on their behalf.
Right. Capture the government. Well,
right.
They did under you know, the Department of Education with Betsy DeVos, whose family, you know, is big in that movement. Of course, you
and always, who are big investors in charter schools.
Yes, and then you always hear. Remember, we want to disband the Federal Department of Education. That's
right.
A big thing. That was one of Rick. That was one of the three things that Rick Perry could remember.
Right.
On the stage.
Right.
And it's one of the big things with Vivek Ramaswamy.
Right.
He wants to, you know, he says, I want to get rid of all these government agencies. And the first one he talks about is education, as if educating the public is not a public good.
A man who made his money because he was educated.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Well,
but, you know, school. If you keep people uneducated, it's easier to control them.
I think a case can be made. You know, these same people who campaign against the LGBT community, they accuse them of being groomers and accuse them of child abuse. If you deny a child an education, isn't that child abuse? Aren't these people guilty of child abuse? I think they are.
It's a different level of child abuse.
It's a horrible level of child abuse. You're not beating the child. You're just making him unfit to live in a civilized society as it's developed.
Yeah,
you're preventing him from participating in the evolution of human life.
Yeah, and then, of course, you find all these clergy who talk about the evils of LGBTQ, and they find out that they're all child molesters.
Yeah.
In their own right.
But, that's right.
Whatever. So, I mentioned that we'll have to see what kind of clout the unions have, and whether the teachers union can get support from other unions.
Teachers union issue only. I mean, these are for kids. This is for all of society. All of society has a stake in this struggle to guarantee the continued existence of democratically controlled public education.
Yeah. Well. Well, you know, and of course, we have those Supreme Court justices who have come up through, you know, a lot of parochial education or colleges that are religiously affiliated. And this is part of the movement that they keep them close. They keep them close.
Yeah,
the forces that these libertarians and the billionaires and things like that.
And what happens, you know, if you take the attitude, government schools, me against the world, we're all in it for ourselves, you end up in a situation where people without power stay without power, because there's no way that some guy on the street can oppose a corporation effectively. They got power. They got money. They can go to the court. They got access to the cops. They write the law. Who are you? You're only somebody if you can get 100 like you to go along with you. Then you might say something. Then you might be able to have some impact. But you and 100 Jews all by yourself are nothing. Ben Franklin was right. Hang together or hang separately.
Yes. That was the thing that they've tried to prevent from happening. You know, the union boss, mine bosses used to try to keep the miners squabbling among themselves. Fight among yourselves so you don't fight us. Keep them divided.
That was one of their great tools. And there was an interesting movie, Mate One, made about 30 years ago, if you remember, about Pennsylvania strikers. And the whole point is, will the strikers who were white be scabbed on by the scabs whom the bosses recruited who were black? And will the strikers be able to unite with these black workers who are being used as scabs? It's a very interesting film.
What's the name of it again?
Matewan, M-A-T-E-W-A-N.
Okay.
In any case, this issue of sticking together to stay alive comes to the fore through an example from Texas. Governor Abbott this week signed a bill that eliminates the right of workers to take a water break twice a day.
Right.
Now, this is aimed at construction workers.
Yeah. In the midst of the worst heat wave that they've seen.
Precisely. In the midst of the worst heat wave in the history of Texas. Of course, the workers that he's talking about, construction workers and agricultural workers, 60% of them are Latino. So, you know, it's not our people who are being affected, right?
It's those people.
It's those people who are being affected. Those people don't have a union.
Right.
So when the union, when the government passes a law that gives the bosses a right to deny the worker a 10-minute break, once in the morning and once in the afternoon to have a drink of water and get out of the heat, they have no place to turn. If these workers were organized into powerful unions, it wouldn't matter what the law said. They would enforce a break.
Yes.
Every construction worker on a union job has two breaks a day. I was one. We had a coffee break in the morning. We had a coffee break in the afternoon. The boss had to come around with salt pills if it was particularly hot. They had to guarantee, there was on big jobs, somebody was hired to guarantee that there was good, cool drinking water available at all times within everybody's reach.
Yeah.
That's the way the union enforced working conditions.
In those days, we didn't know about electrolytes and Gatorade, but
but
still. But, you know, just to step back a minute, the excuse that, well, or the thing that they, the reason they passed this bill in Texas was because local municipalities were passing laws to protect these workers.
Exactly.
And mostly in the big cities where you have most of the construction, the Democratic areas. Of course, you and I have talked about, remember the Republican philosophy that local is better?
Yeah, except when it's not.
Except when it's not.
Right.
And this is again, their hypocrisy.
Right.
We want local control, except when it doesn't, it goes against, you know, the making of money and exploiting of people.
That's right.
These weren't the only ones. We had the UPS drivers who drive in vehicles in this day and age, they have no air conditioning. And there's been histories of some of them either passing out or dying on the job because of an extreme heat in the summertime. And that union apparently has had some success. That UPS says, well, now we're going to put two fans in the vehicles that we have, and starting in 2024 or 2025, when we buy new vehicles for our fleet, we're going to have air conditioning.
Well, but what you're talking about really is a threatened strike by the Teamsters, who are the workers at UPS, for July 1st. And that would be the largest strike in America since the 1990s. which was another UPS strike. 350,000 workers out on strike. If those workers go out on strike and they win their strike, that could be a shot in the arm for the entire labor movement. That's very dangerous to people like Governor Abbott and the people that he fronts for.
Yes.
You've got to watch to see if that strike is really going to take place. But the union has been preparing for that strike for the last year.
Yes. You know, and we had another union, the railroad workers union. If you remember last year, there was a strike or strike threatened, and the administration stepped in, and they were able to come to some agreement. But, the issue of whether or not people could get sick days.
That was why they went on strike, right? Because the railroad wouldn't agree to the sick days.
Right. And that was kind of left on the table. I mean, wages and whatever. But apparently, the Biden administration behind the scenes kept working on it and working on it. And now it looks like there will be sick days that will be available to the railroad workers. Again, something that the force of being united and having the government be on the right side of things, it looks like that's going to come to fruition.
Well, that's right. The workers have to be united. They have to fight. They have to stand up for themselves. But they also need political power. They also have to have some influence. God forbid all the influence, but at least some influence in the halls of government. In this case, they had Julie Sue, the Assistant Secretary of Labor, who stood up for them and went to bat for them and supported them, which is why the Republicans refused to confirm her as the Secretary of Labor.
Right. And the apparently the Democrats don't have enough votes.
No, Manchin is against it. And Sinema is against it. Yeah.
Well, they haven't quite said that, but they haven't come out in support of her.
Right.
So the presumption is that. And the administration isn't backing down or removing her or withdrawing her nomination. But if they can't get it through, inevitably they're going to have to.
Because she can only be the acting secretary for so long.
Right. Right. These things kind of coming together in the, in the summertime, in the heat of... the heat of summer and the heat of battle. This week was the first week of summer.
This could be a hot summer if the UPS workers go out on strike, but it could mean a lot of the significant political developments as an offshoot of that strike. We got to keep our eye on that. Yeah. That, not the shenanigans that McCarthy and Trump and the rest of them are playing around with, is what really is currently significant in politics.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I was reading that in Texas, one of the reasons that the electric grid seems to be holding is because of renewable energy, solar and wind energy, that has doubled. Although they're trying to legislate things that discourage the growth of solar and wind. One legislator says our future is gas. That's what we want here in Texas, gas power.
Our future is gas. Another Holocaust. Well, let's see what happens next week. It's the end of this week.
Yep. Have a good week.
Have a good week. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week. Same time, same place.